You know, over the years, I've seen it all. So now, I'm sharing it all. Join me for unfiltered talks with the names you love on my new podcast, On Par with Maury Povich. Follow and listen to On Par wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, everybody think about it like this. We're an hour closer to the Super Bowl now. And if you had some fun during this hour, then we accomplished our task. We did our jobs. Hour two of After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber here with you. My producer for tonight's show is Blake Schneiders. We're talking Super Bowl 59. We're talking Chiefs-Eagles. We're talking VCRs, Twitter versus X, LimeWire, all of the above. We're giving shout-outs. We're doing all kinds of stuff here on the program tonight. Our number, 913-586-7965. We were talking about ringtones earlier. Somebody says, I'm 33 and still buy ringtones. I hate the default iPhone options. Listen, I respect that. It's a good use of free will, in my opinion. For my money, I don't really care enough. I keep my phone on silent most of the time anyway. I just have my phone on vibrate, so I'm not really all that worried about it. The only sounds my phone makes are when I'm watching a video on Twitter or like my alarm wakes me up in the morning. Another person says, you guys had girlfriends that didn't know they were your girlfriend.
That is very true.
Not necessarily. Okay, for my money, okay, I never did this. But there were always guys, right, that you went to school with you talk about your girlfriends, or your girlfriend would be sitting at your lunch table and inadvertently a stupid junior high kids, you or your friend group would be making fun of somebody else in the friend group. And they'd be like, oh, I have a girlfriend. Okay, what's her name? And they would just make up a name of a girl in a random town somewhere, right? So I don't know if it was necessarily like using the names of real like girls that they knew and saying that they were their girlfriends, or if they were just making people up and doing it along the way.
Yeah, my girlfriends didn't know that they were my girlfriend because they didn't exist.
Yeah.
So.
No harm, no foul in that case, right?
So it happens. We got faces for radio, man.
No question
about
it.
That's why we're on this end.
No question about it. It's my dad's favorite joke about my career. Says it to me all the time. Yeah. You got a face for radio. Oh, it's real funny, Dad.
Yeah, it literally is the oldest joke, and it's not funny anymore.
Yeah, it makes me want to fight him every single time. For all those with Chiefs derangement syndrome, I challenge you to put all your life savings on the Chiefs winning. You're so sure, right?
That's what I've been saying all week.
Yeah, like why is nobody
on it. If you think it's rigged, bet on it, because one of two things is going to happen. Either you're going to win because it's rigged in the Chiefs' favor, apparently, or you're going to shift Vegas into making it rigged, if it is rigged, for the Eagles because there's so much money being brought in on the Chiefs. So either way, it's a win-win for you.
Right.
You either win a lot of money or your team wins. You lose a little bit, but you finally find out it's not rigged for the Chiefs.
Yeah. Yeah. Because if the Chiefs do win, then you confirm this insane thought that you've already concocted in your own brain, because you do not have the bandwidth to watch a great team play sports in today's era without thinking that the NFL is rigged. I mean, the freaking NFL, the NBA was having this argument years ago with the Golden State Warriors, where like fans were complaining that the NBA was rigged for the Warriors, and then the Warriors would lose, and then everybody on the Warriors side would argue that the NBA was rigged against the Warriors. Like the whole thing made absolutely, nobody can bear responsibility for anything anymore. Nobody can just put their hand in the air and say, yep, our team or the team I root for was just not good enough to beat the other team. I don't know. I don't know if it's the participation trophy era. I don't want to say that it's that, because admittedly, that's the era I grew up in. Towards like I was in like the beginning stages of like the, you know, everybody gets a medal at the end of the season and, you know, oh, whatever sort of a thing. So there's going to be people that say it's that, but I just think that it's people who refuse to take responsibility anymore. People just have this innate sense that everything is supposed to go their way all the time, and when it doesn't, it's rigged against them.
And this is coming from like some of the same people that were saying that the Brady era was rigged, and even that held 10 times more weight with the amount of scandals that they had. Filming other teams' practice sets, Deflategate, being able to use a snowblower to get Vinatieri a good hold on a kick.
The tuck rule.
The tuck rule. that was invented on the spot. Like, there's so much more weight. Like, if you wanted to make an argument for it was rigged for the Pats, okay, I'll give you that. Because there was some wild things that happened. But this is so petty. And you got to leave room for to let the baby do its job. Because if you're crying so much, what's the baby doing?
Fair point. I love it.
Like,
yeah, I mean, and that's those are just the ones that are talked about most inside the media. Does everybody remember back in 2014 when the Patriots put Brandon Spikes on IR? And then he wasn't on IR. Like, it was like they falsified injury reports back in 2014, or they allegedly falsified injury reports. And that was the same year of Deflategate. You had a game in Foxborough the next year where the Steelers were alleging that they were having headset malfunctions during the game, where it sounded like they were maybe getting interference, which was interesting. So that was, you know, shortly after, you know, Belichick always found a way to kind of pull a rabbit out of his hat with certain formations and delay a game and false start penalties that would continue to extend the clock. All of those things have since been changed. Everybody's looking at this thing with so much recency and confirmation bias that it's unbelievable. Like, oh, don't tell us what, you know, don't tell us what we're seeing. You know, we're watching it, you know, don't tell us what our eyes are seeing. Like, you're seeing what you want to see, right? If the Chiefs were to lose this game on Sunday and the Eagles were to be called for no penalties and the Chiefs were to have 10 called against them, there's going to be nobody that's saying, oh, the NFL's rigging it for the Philadelphia Eagles. But if the Chiefs win and they get one call that goes their way, one thing, one roughing the passer, one Cincinnati Bengals situation from a couple of years ago where Mahomes was very clearly pushed while he was out of bounds, and all these people, oh, the NFL's rigged, you know, oh, they're just trying to get the Chiefs. Yes, they're trying to get the 34th biggest media market in the United States to win another Super Bowl. Sure. Sure, that makes sense.
The thing that drives me crazy is they're heavily opinionated on something that at its core is actually subjective. Now, it's regulated. Penalties are regulated, and there's times where you're informed to throw a flag and when you're not. But it's subjective because the ref is the one who has to see it, and it's based off his own decision if that constitutes as a penalty. And guess what? Humans get it wrong. It's like calling balls and strikes. I can sit there and tell you all day that was a strike or that was a ball, but guess what? It doesn't matter because the ump is going to call it what he calls it. Are they rigging games for the Dodgers? No, maybe they're just not that great at their job. Or maybe you're seeing something that you think is a penalty when objectively it's objectively that it's not. You just don't like one. So many people, when I read the internet, the lack of understanding of the rules. Now, yeah. I played college football. I had to know the rules of the game. Okay. You have to. So I'm a stickler for when people say things and I'm like, that's dumb. You're dumb. Because you don't know the rule. You just know what you think you know as a fan.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a prime example of that was the fourth down push run by Josh Allen, that quarterback sneak that didn't work. And everybody's like, oh, well, his head was past the line of scrimmage. First of all, that was at a diagonal angle. It wasn't right down the line. So you can't say definitively if his head was past the line of scrimmage. Secondly, his head doesn't determine where the down is. It's the football. The football is where the positioning is on the football field. If the football didn't cross the line of scrimmage, I don't care if the rest of his body was across the line of scrimmage. If the football isn't, that's it.
Oh, and also, guess what? It was called one way on the field, which means the challenge has to be overwhelmingly in the opposite direction.
Gotta have definitive proof.
It's gotta have definitive proof. And guess what? From all the angles, it wasn't definitive. I had to get off the internet because, one, I'm not a huge commenter. I don't like to argue with people on the internet because it's useless. It's a waste of time.
Yeah, everybody's just in their own echo chamber on the internet.
You're going to have a better chance changing somebody's opinion in person than you will behind your keyboard. It's just not going to happen. That is the society of the internet that we have created.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, I had to put it down because the amount of people who just either don't know the rules. I mean, even talking about worthiest catch, they just don't know the rules, man. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. It's one of those things, like, people just, they come to their own conclusion, and then they find things to confirm their own conclusions, right? That's all it is. And people, people love a winner until they determine that you've won too much, and then they start to hate that person, right? I mean, everybody loved Michael Jordan during that run from 91-92, and then in 1993, people started to try to... They started to break the glass. They started to take their chisel to the monument that was Michael Jordan. And it's all, you know, he's the, there might be gambling issues and there might be this. And, you know, the conspiracy that David Stern had given him a year-long suspension. And that's why he was out of the NFL. And okay, folks, like you are coming to your own conclusion. And then, like I said, you're finding things to confirm your own bias that was already premeditated in so many senses of the word. Somebody in the text line says, if the Chiefs win, I will welcome all criticism. Chiefs, refs, Mahomes, Reed, I'll be in DGAF mode. I think we all know what that acronym stands for. And that's my thing. Like, I'm not off social media. For me, Blake, what I have trained myself to do is enjoy the hell out of it.
It
is one of my favorite things, right? I grew up in Kansas City. Most of my family is Chiefs fans, my immediate family. But like, my younger brother is a Bills fan. And I've told this story before. I had a buddy who I played football against in high school who played at Wyoming in college and was roommates with Josh Allen. And he FaceTimed Josh Allen one day while we were all hanging out. And my brother got to FaceTime and talk with Josh Allen, and he became a Bills fan. Okay, whatever. It's understandable, but I still don't respect it. But I got a lot of family, you know, like my uncle was a Raiders fan, and I've got family that are Raiders fans and Giants fans. And it's this whole gambit of people. And they're all over us all the time. Oh, the Chiefs, it's biased, blah, 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 blah. I enjoy it. I'm at a point now where there's nothing else you can say, right? That's the only thing left, because the Chiefs have beaten you so many times into such a submissive state that you've got no other choice but to believe that the NFL and this vast oligarchy in the National Football League Commissioner Roger Goodell, the dictator that he is over the NFL, is somehow rigging things in favor of this small market team with the Kansas City Chiefs. Okay, man, whatever. I just enjoy it. I absolutely love it.
They have gotten so good, and like you said, beaten so many teams into submission that people can't even criticize the team anymore.
Yeah.
Other than character. What they like to go after is, they go after Travis's character, not his play. They go after Patrick Mahomes' character because they say he's a whiny baby and he flops, not his play. You can't even attack them on their talent. You have to find outside things. Their character or the NFL is somehow helping because they're just too good.
Yeah. Yeah, and the worst,
that's how you know you've lost.
Yes, and the worst part of it is, it's one thing for Joe Schmo on his Facebook account to be spewing stupid things. It's another thing and we just had another person mention this, you know, the media across the National Football League. We're seeing people in the media even try to buy into this notion. Skip Bayless and Mad Dog Russo, the shock jockeys that they are, but even people like Ryan Clark and Dan Orlovsky, like people that I really respect in the industry and value their insight and their opinion, they're buying into this because it's the popular thing to do, right? That's how you get people to tune in, and the shock value and the clicks and the, you know, oh, this is going to get me on Twitter today. This is going to get me viral on whatever. This is going to get me more views on TikTok sort of crap that I can't stand it. All right. Whew. There was the soapbox. Glad we got on it. It's time to get off. 913-586-7965 is our number. Another person says, I want to win so bad so all the rage-baiting morning show hosts can eat it. Yeah, Craig Carton and Mark Schlereth are going to eat a ton of crow Monday morning if the Chiefs win the Super Bowl on Sunday night. That one's going to be fun to watch. But we do have some rather somber news to discuss here when we come back. A reporter out of the Kansas City area who was down in New Orleans covering the Chiefs tragically lost his life. More information about that story has been coming out here as of late via a lot of different publications, including the Associated Press. So I want to talk a little bit about this story here on the other side of this break. You're listening to After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber joined by Blake Schneiders. Folks, it's your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan.
Getting closer and closer to Super Bowl Sunday with every minute as we just wait around anxiously to see if the Kansas City Chiefs can complete this Super Bowl three-peat in Super Bowl 59 on Sunday against the Philadelphia Eagles. After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber joined by Blake Schneiders. We got a lot more to talk about here on tonight's program. A lot of it more upbeat, talking about this Super Bowl and the excitement that we all feel about what our hometown Kansas City Chiefs can get accomplished Sunday evening. But do have an unfortunate and sad story that came out earlier this week. A TV reporter out of Kansas City, Adam Manzano, a 27-year-old anchor and reporter for Telemundo in Kansas City, who was down in New Orleans covering the Chiefs' potential three-peat here. He was found dead Wednesday night in his hotel room in Kenner, Louisiana, just outside of New Orleans. A 48-year-old woman, Danette Colbert, has been arrested and is charged with four felonies and a misdemeanor fraud and theft charge. She also is facing a charge of possession of a stolen firearm, but apparently is not related to the case. She was found on security video footage arriving with Manzano at his hotel room and leaving about an hour later. And then later it was found authorities figured out that she had allegedly used his credit card at several stores. They found his credit card and his cell phone at her residence in Slidell, which is northeast of New Orleans. And so this story continuing to unfold here, but a sad situation as a 27-year-old reporter and anchor who was covering the Chiefs Super Bowl in New Orleans this week found dead in a suburb just outside New Orleans, and a woman arrested in connection with his death. So I wanted to quickly report on that situation there. Again, more information is going to come out about this as we go along, but definitely a sad, sad situation to see happen down in New Orleans with such a positive week that this is supposed to be for Chiefs Kingdom. And, you know, a person who was down in New Orleans trying to enjoy the festivities and just do his job to hear this unfold is incredibly, incredibly unfortunate. You know, kind of going along those same lines, we didn't get a chance to talk about this yesterday, but a massive figure in the grand scheme of the National Football League, Virginia Hallis McCaskey, who was the longtime owner and chief executive of the Chicago Bears, passed away earlier this week, passed away yesterday, in fact, at the age of 102. She is, of course, the daughter of George Hallis, who was the founder of the Chicago Bears. And she took over ownership of the team in 1983 and was the owner of the Bears until her death yesterday. She was the owner of the team when they won that Super Bowl in 1986 and has laid down a massive, massive impact on the NFL and across the avenue of sports. She was, I want to say, one of, if not the first female owner in professional sports in North America. I don't know that for certain. So again, don't take me at my word here or think that I'm some sort of know-it-all, but I believe she was potentially the first female owner in the history of American professional sports. I'm trying to see.
Technically, it was Helen Britton in 1911.
Oh, wow.
To own the St. Louis Cardinals.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But that is, I would not have got that either.
I was not. In fact, I had very little knowledge that the St. Louis Cardinals were a football team. I had no idea about.
Oh,
is it the baseball team or is it the football team?
The baseball team.
Because there was a St. Louis Cardinals football team.
Yes, correct.
Which I guess I had some like base level knowledge of, but I really didn't know the detail of it until I was working down in Springfield, because it's a massive St. Louis sports fandom community down there. And I was like, oh, so you had a St. Louis Cardinals football and a St. Louis Cardinals baseball team at the same time?
That is correct.
All right. I mean, technically, New York had the New York Football Giants and the New York Giants baseball team.
True.
For a period there. So I guess that makes some sense. But
still, she was one of the first women owners, one of the first women owners.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, pretty incredible. And now we see it at a point now where I believe there are, prior to her death, there were 10 female owners in the National Football League. Now, they weren't all majority owners, but they in some way, shape, or form were attached as part of the ownership group of certain teams across the NFL. So certainly a person who had a tremendous impact on the league. She was the longest tenured owner in the NFL prior to her passing. A couple of years ago, she was actually a semifinalist for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So could be interesting to see if she gets in at some point in her career. That would be pretty phenomenal. She was alive in 2007, of course, when the NFC Championship Trophy became known as the Halas Trophy, which I'm sure was a tremendous honor for her and her husband and her family for so many different reasons. Interesting story there. Another story out of the NFL today, Tyreek Hill, back in the news cycle, who, for a couple of different reasons. Number one, he issued an apology to the Miami Dolphins today, saying that, you know, he was frustrated at the time that he made those comments, and then later was frustrated with himself for making those comments, says he wants to remain in Miami as a member of the Dolphins. But he was also asked, I saw this via Chris Sims on social media earlier today, talking about, you know, how Tyreek Hill feels about the trajectory the Chiefs have been on since his departure. And he said, quote, "It's tough. It sucks not being here, but I got to support my boys." He also says that he has some regret about leaving Kansas City. You think? I would too, my guy. You decided that for a few more million dollars a year that you would sacrifice being able to compete and win Super Bowls.
I think a couple of years back, if you would have asked anybody who had on their bingo card Tyreek Hill leaving and Kareem Hunt coming back, it would have been about zero.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, after everything that went down, for Kareem Hunt to be a massive part of the Chiefs offense in the year of our Lord 2025, I'm not sure many people saw that one coming. Chris Sims said that Tyreek has said he always has thoughts that maybe he shouldn't have left Kansas City. He later said, "I'm taking full responsibility for what I said. I'm going to come back next year. I want to stay with the Dolphins." See if that comes to fruition. But we did have NFL honors yesterday across the National Football League, so I want to take an opportunity here on the other side of this break and discuss who won the awards last night, what our reactions were to that, as well as the four-person class to be inducted into the Hall of Fame, the Pro Football Hall of Fame this year. We'll kind of give our insight, our reaction to that one as well. This is Logan Weber. My producer for tonight's show is Blake Schneiders. You're listening to After Hours on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
Two sleeps to three, Pete. Well said. Somebody in the text line, big shout out to you, 660, giving us that little adage. Yeah, that's all you got to think about. Just that perspective. And I hope you're enjoying us here on After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber here with you, Blake Schneiders, trying to give you a little bit of entertainment to dole out, to drown out the monotony of just waiting around and waiting around and waiting around for less than 2 days from now, 5:30 p.m. on Sunday for Super Bowl 59. Yesterday, the National Football League did its best to try to break up some of that monotony themselves. They had the NFL honors yesterday, and I think for the most part, there weren't many surprises in terms of who the award recipients were. I think that maybe the biggest surprise of the night might have been Josh Allen actually walking away with the MVP. So we'll kind of run down the list of these here, kind of with the ones that were the most obvious. Saquon Barkley winning Offensive Player of the Year. I don't think there was any real argument from anybody to the contrary. If the MVP, which by all intents and purposes is just a quarterback-driven award nowadays, the Offensive Player of the Year has to be the non-quarterback MVP at this point. And Saquon was the best player in the NFL this year. Quarterback or not, I think Saquon Barkley had the best season of any individual player in the National Football League this season. And he deserved the honor of being Offensive Player of the Year. No question in anybody's mind. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I can see an argument for the Triple Crown winner in Ja'Marr Chase. I can see an argument. I'm not saying I'm going to agree with it, but I think that the Bengals have an argument there with Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, Triple Crown's hard to win.
Oh, no question about it. It's hard to win. I mean, it's hard when it hasn't even been half a decade since the last guy did it with Cooper Kupp, and he did it with better numbers overall than Ja'Marr Chase did. So that's kind of hard to contend with. You were on a team that finished below 500 and didn't make the playoffs. Not that that was your fault, right? I'm not the biggest Ja'Marr Chase fan on the planet. I think, you know, his attitude leaves something to be desired. His profound hatred for the Chiefs is well documented, but he's a phenomenal football player. I think the fact that it had been done recently, I think the fact that you were on a sub 500 team, and I think the fact that Saquon Barkley was on the precipice of breaking Eric Dickerson's record for rushing yards in a season, and the fact that he will more likely than not, barring maybe the best rush defense performance in Super Bowl history by the Kansas City Chiefs, I think more likely than not, he breaks Terrell Davis's record for most rushing yards by a single player in a season, including the playoffs. I think he only needs like 30 yards or something to break the record. So more than likely he's going to get that.
Well, and if anything, also what Saquon Barkley did this year also sheds light and proves how hard it is to break that record. He did it. Eric Dickerson did it, I think, with one less game back in the day. And Barkley now has an extra game and still couldn't do it. We've seen a couple guys get close. I know last year, I think Derrick Henry was on a run that everybody thought, or was it 2 years ago that he was on that kind of chasing 2,000.
Yeah.
Saquon was chasing 2,000, got 2,000, but couldn't get to 2,100. Chris Johnson back in the day.
CJ2K,
baby. CJ2K,
baby.
He was on the verge of it.
Adrian Peterson was another one.
Was close. So, like, it just kind of, that's a record that is so, has such prestige to it that I think it does shed light on, man, you got close, and it's hard to break because it's never been done.
Yeah, he did it. Eric Dickerson did it in his second year in the National Football League.
That's wild.
In 1984.
Yep.
Yeah, 2,105 yards rushing.
In how many games?
16.
So they did have 16. Okay.
Yes, 16-game season.
But it is still one less than today.
Yeah. The impressive nature, and I know this is a name that has got some shock value. All right, everybody prepare. But it does put into perspective a little bit of how impressive that season was with OJ.
Of course.
Right? Where he went for 2,014 games. That's
incredible.
Pretty unbelievable for him to do that.
That's where you separate the art from the artist.
Yeah. that's a good way of putting it. So I don't think that it surprises anybody that Saquon's Offensive Player of the Year. Defensive Player of the Year went to Pat Surtain II. I thought that was a great pick. I felt like he should have won the award. Trey Hendrickson, he should have gotten some consideration, absolutely, for being the NFL sack leader by a pretty decent margin as well, especially doing it on a really bad Bengals defense. Like, outside of him, they had no real prospects going on. He was a star for that Cincinnati Bengals team while drawing a significant number of double teams for the Bengals this season. Offensive Rookie of the Year, Jaden Daniels. No surprise to anybody there. I thought Bo Nix was kind of making a run for it at a certain point, but what Jaden Daniels did this season, especially, you know, after the regular season ended and taking the Commanders to an NFC Championship game, is just extraordinary. Brock Bowers, he got the only other vote. I mean, Jaden Daniels was almost the unanimous Offensive Rookie of the Year. He got 49 out of 50 votes. The only one vote went to Brock Bowers, who
set
some NFL records this year.
Yeah, well-deserved.
And did it on a bad offense, right? I mean, we talk about what Trey Hendrickson accomplished with a bad defense. Brock Bowers, he didn't know who was throwing him the football on a week-by-week basis. Quarter or halfway through the season, you trade away the next best weapon with Devontae Adams. So there's, you know, the receivers that were running around was sort of like,
Well, and I almost think it's more impressive because on offense, you can only do something when you get the ball. On defense, it's a little bit more individualistic. You can go make a play if you have to. On offense, unless I'm getting the ball, unless I'm the quarterback, it's hard for me to make a play if I'm not getting the ball. So that to me is actually pretty astounding what he did on a bad offense.
No question about it. And as a tight end, is just really, really impressive. Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas Jr. I mean, it was a pretty extraordinary rookie year offensively for players. excuse me. I would say defensively, it was a little bit more laxed in a lot of respects, but the no doubt selection was Jared Verse of the Los Angeles Rams. Give Chop Robinson from the Dolphins some credit, and Fisky also from the Rams. And then, of course, the two DBs from the Eagles, who we will all see on Sunday with Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean credit. But Jared Verse had the best rookie year of any of these guys, hence the reason he was the only defensive rookie selected to the Pro Bowl.
Did you get a chance to watch much of his games?
I watched a few, and I watched the Vikings wild card game,
yes,
in which their defensive line went nuts, including him.
Yeah, they tore it up. I had because I've got Red Zone, as well as just watching individual games, I got to watch him quite a bit over the year. I was extremely impressed. I mean, any team would be lucky to have him, especially somebody as a rookie who comes in at one of the most difficult positions on the field, at defensive end. And he tore it up, man. He's a physical specimen, but just his overall gameplay and how quickly he adapted to the NFL, you know, playing with the big boys now, I thought very much well-deserved for them. Good for the Rams.
Yeah, absolutely good for the Rams. I mean, he was a guy, him and Fisky both kind of came in, you know, they're dealing with the post-Aaron Donald era of the Rams defensive line, and that's a lot of pressure to put on somebody because Aaron Donald might be the best defensive lineman to ever step foot in the National Football League. I said might be. Don't come at me. I know there's going to be people that are going to say J.J. Watt or Lawrence Taylor. I get it. I said maybe. He's in the conversation. So for him, for those two guys to step into those sorts of roles with all that pressure that surrounded it, in a year where the Rams, people were kind of writing them off. Okay, this is the year that the Rams take a step back. I'll admit, I had them finishing third in the NFC West behind the Seahawks and the Niners. The Niners' entire team ended up in the hospital, and the Seahawks took a step back, so they benefited greatly from that. Comeback player of the year went to Joe Burrow. I don't have a great deal of complaint towards that. I was of the belief that it should have been Sam Darnold. Burrow has won the award already once before because of an injury. This is becoming a bit of a regular thing for him in his career, and he said as much when he came up and accepted the honor, that this is not the kind of thing that you want to become a perennial winner for. But Sam Darnold was almost entirely out of the league, right? I mean, he was backing up Bryce Young for the Carolina Panthers a year ago, for Christ's sake. And now he's doing what he's doing for the Minnesota Vikings, and he's a Pro Bowler this year. That's extraordinary, right? I mean, a Vikings team that also drafted a quarterback in the top 10 in J.J. McCarthy, and everybody's like, okay, he's the guy, he's the future, and the script has been flipped because of Sam Darnold and what he accomplished this year during the regular season to a lot of people, including myself, saying, no, Sam Darnold's your guy. You do what you want with J.J. McCarthy. Keep him, continue to try to give him more seasoning and more experience as a backup. That's fine. Or trade him. But I think Sam Darnold's your guy. What he did is incredibly, incredibly impressive. I would have said Sam Darnold should have been comeback player of the year, more so than Joe Burrow. But I'm not, you know, overwhelmingly upset that it was Joe Burrow.
Yeah, and I'm not going to be either. I think if you think of what comeback player of the year is, if you look at the story of Sam Darnold from first round draft pick to then just the tumultuous career and bouncing around that he had, and then to come back and lead the team that he first starts for to the playoffs, that says comeback player of the year, not the guy who's a Pro Bowler who then got hurt and then came back and was a Pro Bowler again. That doesn't sound like comeback to me. I mean, yeah, you got injured. Okay, that's one thing. But it's not like he, I mean, even Eric Berry beat cancer,
yeah,
and came back. So like, I'm all with you on the Darnold thing. Somebody from the on the text line to 816. Kareem deserves the comeback award more than anybody.
He played last season though. Like, I get what you're saying. He was, you know, he was just sitting on his couch and the Chiefs called him. I mean, maybe consideration for it, but I wouldn't say he was more deserving than Sam Darnold was for the award.
I could see him getting a vote.
Yeah. I like the mention that, that Joe Burrow only missed like six games last year, right? The final six games of the year. So that's kind of an intriguing thing. Another same person says, Sam Darnold was never good. What was he coming back from?
Not being good. That's the whole thing.
Yeah, coming back from almost being out of the league, right? I mean, from being a scout team guy for the Carolina Panthers, right? I mean, he was the backup playing scout team quarterback, and Baker Mayfield was playing scout team D-end. And those two guys had the years that they had. It was pretty extraordinary stuff. Coach of the Year, we'll talk about here when we come back, as well as Assistant Coach of the Year, and then ultimately, of course, the NFL's MVP and the Walter Payton Man of the Year. There's a lot of honors to be doled out last night, and hopefully coming up here in the final hour we've got here with you, we'll discuss the inductees, or the soon-to-be inductees, into the latest class of the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. Four names mentioned last night. Maybe some snubs on that list that we'll discuss a little bit later on. This is After Hours with Logan Weber and Blake Schneiders here on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
Boy, the text line's on a heater tonight. There have been some outrageous comments. I'm talking about Joe Burrow winning comeback player of the year. Somebody said Tyreek Hill should have won the award. I will leave the context up to you. Somebody said, what's up, guys? Chiefs fan from Manhattan, Kansas. Great show so far. Hey, appreciate you. Thanks for tuning in all the way from Manhattan, Kansas. Got a big one tomorrow night there in Manhattan. Jayhawks coming to town. KU, K-State. Little Sunflower Showdown in Manhattan.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend. So K-State, you guys better do what you do, because that I don't know when the last time... I'm a diehard Missouri fan here, by the way.
I got you.
Don't know the last time KU lost to both MU and K-State in the same season.
Wow. That's a good question. Last time that Kansas State, that KU lost to K-State and Mizzou in the same basketball season. I don't even know if I could find that. I'm sure somebody can go look it up. I'm sure it's been quite a while, obviously, because Mizzou's no longer in the SEC. Talking about the NFL honors that were given out last night, somebody said it's just a weird named award, talking about the comeback player of the year. Yeah, the criteria for it is sort of sporadic. It's not super precise in a lot of respects, so I think that there's some questions to be had for it. But the awards we didn't have a chance to talk about, and we'll talk about them here briefly here. Maybe we'll wait till the last hour of our show to discuss the MVP debate. The Coach of the Year in the National Football League this year went to Kevin O'Connell of the Minnesota Vikings. Okay, I get it, right? I mean, you lose J.J. McCarthy to the ACL tear. You let Kirk Cousins walk. You bring in Sam Darnold, who nobody had any expectation of whatsoever, and you won 14 games, right? You were a Sunday night. You were the final game of the regular season away from being the one seed in the NFC and tying the Chiefs for the best record in the NFL. I get it. Right. Dan Campbell was another one of the finalists. I felt like last year was his chance. You know, this time around, it just wasn't quite the same. Sean Payton with the Broncos, phenomenal year. Right. Dan Quinn with the Commanders, phenomenal year. Rookie quarterbacks to have the kind of success that they had to put themselves in playoff position. Phenomenal. God, Andy Reid is the coaching equivalent of Nolan Ryan. Like at this point, I mean, there's no other comparison to draw at this point. It's nuts. I mean, he has won exactly one coach of the year award in his entire career. And that was in 2002. He was the Associated Press's NFL coach of the year. How has he been in Kansas City for a decade plus and had the sort of success that he's had and never won a Super Bowl?
How did he not win it?
Coach of the year.
In 2018, when he was a fresh coach with Alex Smith, and then not win at any of the Super Bowl years either. I mean, that's mind-boggling.
Yeah, I don't get it. I really don't. I think some of it is, and I'll give a shout-out to Julio Sanchez, who was producing for me last night. He said that it's sort of like with Andy Reid, he's reached a point in his career now where that's the expectation, right? Like, these other coaches, for Kevin O'Connell, he got the award last night because his team exceeded all expectations. But I feel like we're not giving enough due credit to Andy Reid for reaching the expectations for this org, because the expectations for the Kansas City Chiefs right now are otherworldly. There's only a few teams in the history of team sports that you can point to as having this high of an expectation, the bar being that high for a team and still accomplishing that. I mean, to go 15-2 with four different guys at left tackle, losing your number one wide receiver during the early part of the year, losing your number two wide receiver before the season even started, having a rookie wide receiver thrust into a wide receiver one role that he was not prepared for, having to trade for DeAndre Hopkins, who's dealing with an MCL injury, right? To lose Isaiah Pacheco at one point in the year and sign Kareem Hunt off the couch to come have the kind of season that he had.
To lose your starting cornerback. Who at the time was playing a top three corner in the league.
Yeah, to a guy who was, in my view, the numbers back me up, the analytics, who was the number one cover corner man-to-man in the National Football League last year in L'Jarius Sneed. And to still go 15-2.
I'm even talking about Watson.
Yeah, Jalen Watson you lost at a point this year. I mean, for a great deal of this season. It's... I don't know. Andy Reid's not getting his credit. He's not getting
no respect.
No respect. Absolutely not. And somebody in the text line just said that. That was great. That was a solid like Godfather Goodfellas sort of like.
It's Rodney Dangerfield, man. Come on.
I get it, but it's that Italian sort of
no respect from me. There you go.
Oh, that's awesome. All right. We didn't get a chance to talk about the MVP. Of course, the assistant coach of the year yesterday was Ben Johnson of the Detroit Lions. Surprise nobody. You know, Steve Spagnuolo's not a finalist for it. Again, I think the same thing with Andy Reid goes ditto for Steve Spagnuolo. The expectation is the expectation. And it seems like the voters just can't get that out of their heads. Eric Armstead was the Walter Payton Man of the Year this year. When we come back here on the other side of this break, our final hour of After Hours on this Friday night as we approach, it's the Super Bowl Eve for those of us in Chiefs Kingdom. We're going to talk about the MVP, which was given out last night to Josh Allen for the first time in his career. We'll say if we agree or disagree and kind of give our thoughts on what we think about the NFL MVP and what it stands for now compared to where it may have stood for, you know, even 5 years ago. We'll also talk about the Hall of Fame induction class in 2024-25 for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, the four guys who got their names called last night. That's all coming up on the other side of this break. You're listening to After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber, Blake Schneiders, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.